No, not a lot of things, but yeah, make sure you really search your soul. Anyway, you're welcome to call in and be on the program. We are live here this July the 8th. Probably, depending on weather, we may not be broadcasting Monday. So if you want to call in today. We're the folks who believe the Bible is literally true and scientifically accurate. The Earth is about 6,000 years old. The evolution theory being taught in our schools in violation of the First Amendment is the dumbest and most dangerous religion in the history of planet Earth. Absolutely dumb idea to believe you came from a rock 4.6 billion years ago and that any animal has ever been able to produce something other than its kind. That really is a dumb idea. But that's okay. We can help you. We can help you overcome that tragedy that happened when you were educated to believe such a thing. We can unbrainwash you and lift the scales off your eyes and get you to see the truth. So if you want to join the program, this is Kent Hovind, H-O-V-I-N-D, in Pensacola, Florida, and Jonathan Sampson. And you can contact us by calling 877-479-3466, 877-479-3466. Go to extension 136. Or you can instant message us at Dr. Dino Live, D-R-D-I-N-O-L-I-V-E, and that is AOL, instant message. Okay, we're going to go over a couple of articles here, unless we got a caller there. Jonathan, is that what we got?
Yeah, we've got, I believe his name is Steve.
Yes, sir.
All right, let me get over where I can hear the speaker in our high-tech studio. Go ahead, Steve, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Connecticut.
Connecticut.
Yes,
been
sir.
There a couple times. Beautiful place.
Yeah, actually, I met you there once a little while back. I was going to talk to you about what the evolutionists call the Cambrian explosion.
All right.
And I'd read that in Time magazine or Newsweek, one of those magazines, where they said there wasn't much life on Earth. Then all of a sudden, things happened and went crazy. And what I guess I'm calling you to say is that they didn't come up with that theory because of a preponderance of evidence. They came up with that theory because of a lack of evidence, because they couldn't find anything in the fossil record that bridged the gap between unicellular life and invertebrates. And so between unicellular life and invertebrates, they said that they must have evolved quickly from unicellular to invertebrates, and they called it the Cambrian explosion. And I find that ironic because they didn't come up with the theory because of a preponderance of evidence. They came up with it because of a lack of evidence.
Interesting. First of all, there's no such thing as a Cambrian period.
Right, exactly. But that's what they call it.
I know. No such thing as a geologic column and no such thing as a fossil record.
Right.
There's a bunch of bones in the dirt. You know, they put their record on it. They put their interpretation on it. There's no
exactly.
such thing as a fossil record. Well, good. So you got somebody in Connecticut with a brain that understands that.
Yeah, I wanted to rename it for them, if you don't mind.
Sure.
I wanted to call it the Cambrian implosion.
Ooh, Eric, that's a good idea. Yeah, they wonder, how do we go from no life forms to all of a sudden during the Cambrian, so-called Cambrian, they find every major type of, you know, every major, I don't know if it's family, but sure,
right.
they're different phyla, and classes and orders. I don't know how far down it goes, but unbelievable numbers of things and varieties of things have been found in what they consider the Cambrian era.
Exactly. Well, you go for any kind of a starfish, what you call sponges, et cetera, et cetera. And they claim that this all happened at once, but that's about a 1 or 2 billion year gap in the evolutionary model. They can't explain it, so they come up with another theory because of a lack of evidence. I don't get it. But what amazes me is that intelligent people are coming up with this, you know, otherwise intelligent people.
Right, otherwise intelligent.
If they've been given decent minds, and they're not using it, unfortunately.
Well, the Bible says in 2 Peter that the scoffers will be willingly ignorant.
Exactly.
There's no better way to describe it. They're dumb on purpose. they've deliberately chosen to be dumb.
Yeah, it's actually sad. I'm laughing, but it's actually a sad thing.
It really is sad. And that's why we spend a fortune trying to reach these people, and we do reach thousands, tens of thousands of them. Okay, we're reaching. Some we're not able to reach, though we'd like to.
Yeah, actually, I got some of your tapes. There's a missionary in India. I sent some of your tapes to him, and he's been showing it to people in India who have been taught evolution, and a lot of those people have used your tapes to get past that obstacle and are able to come to faith when they see that the whole thing is basically a hoax.
Well, amen.
So that's all the way in Bombay. So I want to let you know that your words are getting out, and there may be opposition, but people are listening, and I think that one by one lives are being changed. So it's an encouraging thing.
Well, wonderful. Hey, thanks for calling.
All right, Lord bless.
All right, thanks a lot. All right, folks, if you want to be on the program, you can call. We are live today. This is July the 8th of 2005. And you can call in 850-479-DINO, 850 or 877. Both will get you there, 877-479-3466. And then go to extension 136. We only have one line into the studio, but a bunch of lines into this, into the ministry. Go ahead, John.
Yep, or Instant Messenger, AOL Instant Messenger, Dr. Dino Live, which is, I guess, easier for some people out there and some of the atheists who don't like to actually voice their opinion vocally, or verbally, I guess.
Right.
So it's Dr. Dino Live, D-R-D-I-N-O-L-I-V-E.
And on the news is Hurricane Dennis, Pensacola, boarding up again. You know, Jonathan, isn't it something? Evolutionists teach if you add energy, you can create order.
Well, we've got tons of it coming.
Yeah. Hurricane Ivan added lots of energy to the city.
Yeah.
Didn't organize a thing. How on earth can they believe this? You know, and you look at what a hurricane can do to a house, okay? What is the probability of a hurricane hitting a lumber yard and building a house? It's zero.
Yeah, not very high.
It's not like it's you know, 1 in 20 bazillion. It's zero. There is no chance. It'll never happen. And these evolutionists are betting their soul on such a slim chance. I mean, you flip through the channels and you see this worldwide poker tournaments and stuff on TV, and they show the percentage of chance the guy has of winning, you know, with different cards he has. And they get down where they got a 5% chance of winning and a 10% chance of winning. And, you know, nobody in their right mind would bet on a zero or a 0.00001% chance of winning. You'd be a fool to do that. But that's exactly what they've done with this evolution theory. They've decided to bet there. It's not just a scientific theory. This affects everything. I mean, this is going to affect our eternity. Anyway, so we want to help to fix that. If you want to call in beyond the program, we'll take your call or comments. And some of the evolutionists apparently have given up, Jonathan. They used to listen in and used to call back and write in and think we're going to show those guys up, but apparently we showed them up because we're winning. It's kind of like ping pong or tennis or badminton. There's a lot of games that are played like that. Whoever ends up with the ball in their court loses. You know, as long as you keep responding, you stay in the game. As soon as you don't respond, you lose. Now, I will have to say, with the 20 or so evolutionists or atheists that have tried to engage me in email debates, I did not respond, even only to say, I don't do this. I'll take you on live in front of any university. So, and one wrote an article, Hovind refuses to debate. There's a whole website about that.
you've made it so incredibly clear. I mean, and they can just check out the itinerary. You don't have a whole lot of free time. I mean, if they expect you to sit down and peck around at a keyboard to talk to 12 people when you could speak to 12,000, I mean, that's ridiculous.
Right. We have other things to do than that. Okay, here we go. Article, what is this, Creation, A-F-A-R-I-S? Is this somebody's website, Jonathan?
Let's just say kind of a Creation Evolution News.
Oh, website. Creation Safaris. Okay. Is this from Dave Wetzel? Creation Safari?
I'm not too sure.
Anyway, article says, did old metamorphic rocks form in just 10 years? A discovery in Norway may collapse a geologic process by 5 or 6 orders of magnitude. A paper by Carnacco et al., announced in Nature magazine, discovered this comment by Simon Kelly at Open University in the United States Kingdom. In the same issue, here's a quote. Conventional wisdom says that changes to crustal rocks push down deep when continents collide, develop over millions of years. But it seems that some metamorphism may be caused by tectonic events lasting only a decade. The gist of the story is that certain rocks called eclogites, long thought to have formed slowly over millions of years, might have formed rapidly instead, maybe in only 10. The authors of the paper deduced that they could not have remained at the temperatures assumed for very long without losing all their argon. Kelly explains why the mixtures in the rocks suggest conflicting remnants for their formation. The authors go on to estimate the temperature in the granulite lens during eclogite formation. Their conclusion, less than 400 degrees centigrade, is a problem for the conventional interpretation of these rocks, given that a temperature of around 700 degrees centigrade is required for the formation of the adjacent eclogites. And they go on talking about how that 18,000 years must have been about 18,000 years to explain the potassium for the argon 40 to argon 39 age profiles. Interesting article, Jonathan. How do you find this stuff?
It's all over the place.
It is. Bible says in the book of Daniel in the last days, you know, that knowledge shall be increased. And that's certainly what we have. I don't think it's wisdom necessarily, but certainly knowledge is being increased. People, more knowledge is available. Man, one click of the button on the Internet, you can get incredible amounts of information. So, did old metamorphic rock form in just 10 years? I'm going to have to cut and paste some of that and add that to Seminar Part 6, because I get evolutionists all the time say, well, it took a long time for metamorphic rock to form, you know? So I don't think so. I think it can form quickly, but this is a good example over here. All right. That's interesting. Another article here. Lions guard kidnap victim in Ethiopia. Some news stories may make you wonder about divine providence. Netscape News reported a story of lions that rescued a kidnapped Ethiopian girl who was being beaten by seven men trying to force her to marry one of them. In Ethiopia, men will often beat and rape a woman who resists a forced marriage. Up to 70% of marriages involve such abductions, often with severe beatings. The lions guarded and protected this woman for about half a day till she was found, and then left her like a gift and went back into the forest. Huh. No unwarranted claims here, just an interesting item. The flip side is that this story should make us all angry about the lowest of beasts, sinful men. Who would do such a thing? The article says this kind of atrocity is the norm. In this depraved culture, kidnapping and rape with beatings is the men's customary way to force women into marriage when they resist. For more ugliness, see what a photographer found going on in a neighboring Darfur, Sudan, as reported in National Geographic News. Let me click on this link here. Surviving Darfur, Life in the Camps. Boys, I was reading one article, Jonathan, about what happens in Sudan with the Muslim population and the way they have enslaved Christians over there. Man. And here we are. We got, you know, Bush saying, oh, the Muslims are basically a peaceful people. Sorry. No, they're not a peaceful people. If they can't be and be a good Muslim. I mean, there may be some that are, but they do that in spite of their religion teaches them not to be this way at all. They're required to kill everybody who won't convert to Islam. So it's just simply not true. That you can. Oh, here we go. ID is the future. Interesting article. Intelligent design is the future. Catholic Church and evolution. ID the future is the website here. Oh, Michael Behe, he's Catholic, yeah. Intelligent design. Interesting. Okay, I'm going through all the articles here, folks, quick as I can. Get your instant message in. We'll get to those in a second at Dr. Dino Live, AOL Instant Message, Dr. Dino Live. First, we'd like to get some of the news here. Looks like Hurricane Dennis is going to be the news for at least the next few days around here. Okay. Interesting. All right. Well, I can take the news anytime here, Jonathan. Is that a caller for the program?
It's our good friend Eric.
Our good friend Eric.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, I've come prepared this time, I think. And hope.
Are you saying then that you weren't prepared the last times?
Well, it's hard to prepare for a lot of what you say, but since I'm bringing up an old topic such as slavery, I think I've got your corner this time.
Okay. Are you prepared to say that on the previous topics I was right and you were wrong, or you're not going to go quite that far yet?
Well, I want to say that you brought up things that distracted me from my point, and I didn't exactly know how to respond to them.
Okay.
Not that, I mean, you can't really say that, you know, a person's right or wrong without, you know, having an intellectual debate, and that's what I'm here for. Now, I want to start off by asking you, Kent, do you think slaves should obey their masters? And that's what I should have asked the first time.
That already begs a couple of bigger questions, like should we have slavery at all? But yes, for instance, is someone going to prison, is that slavery? I mean,
No, that's not even near slavery.
Why would that not be slavery of locking somebody up in a cell?
Because they are deserving of that punishment. They did something in order to go to jail, and that's why they're there. No one in slavery usually deserves it. Well, I can see where some people maybe deserve it in slavery, but, you know, for the most part, almost everyone in slavery is innocent.
Well, I don't know about that. That would be a tough call. But I mean, like during warfare, when one country conquers another country, let's suppose, you know, the Edomites attack the Israelites unprovoked, just go in there and attack them and start beating them up. So the Israelites beat them in war and then enslave them.
Uh-huh.
So here they have the aggressor who now has become enslaved. Would that be right or wrong?
That is not right. And
should they kill him instead?
Well, they should have compassion, Ken, like the Bible teaches, and let them go.
If somebody comes and attacks you or attacks your family, are you going to defend yourself? Are you going to stop them?
Well, once you defeat them, then the right choice is obviously forgiveness, right?
Well, what if their intention is to come do it again? Like, hey, you let go of my hand, and I'm going to grab my gun and shoot you again, you know?
Well, Ken, but it doesn't make any sense. If you put someone in slavery, then they're still going to be there and still have the option of killing you. They just have to plan it out then more carefully.
Well, we put people in prison, and they still have the option. Obviously, I mean, it happens. Prison murders.
Yes, but they're much more carefully watched. And the people already know that these guys might have plans. You know, slaves are just kind of generally over, you know, just kind of watched and then trusted to do things. But we're getting away from the point.
Well, no, you asked the question, is slavery, should a slave obey his master?
Yes.
Well, let me answer that after the break here. We'll be back. And tune in, folks, Dr. Dino Live.
One of the greatest helpers for Truth Radio in the past has been those of you who have signed up for Lifeline telephone service, long-distance service, local service, internet service, and now the Lifeline company, Lifeline Communications, is offering service through T-Mobile. If you have a cell phone or if you would like to have a cell phone service that really works and has really modern, neat equipment and a great approach to this whole business of cell phone, and you want to help Truth Radio at the same time, then may I recommend that you call 800, that's 800-311-2418. That's 800-311-2418. And tell them that you want to sign up for T-Mobile through Lifeline. Phone 1-800-311-2418. Your participation with Lifeline will help Truth Radio. 800-311-2418.
We have a very busy day ahead of us.
I know. Review the troops and lunch with foreign dignitaries.
And after lunch, we...
By the way, who were you talking to out in the hall?
Oh, that was, he came without an appointment, said he needs to talk to you. William Winkelmeyer.
Bill? Well, send him in.
But, sir, you're schedule.
Oh, the schedule can wait. If Bill is having problems, I need to help.
But what about the lunch with the dignitaries?
Oh, right, lunch.
Of course, Your Majesty, we mustn't forget about the lunch.
Right. Bill might be hungry. Prepare two pheasants under glass.
But, Your Majesty, there is so much to do.
Winston, it'll get done. Trust me. I promised Bill that if he ever needed help or just a friend to listen, I'd be there for him.
But, sir,
I have no intentions of breaking that promise.
Jesus made this same promise to anyone willing to come to him. If you need answers, Jesus wants to help. A message from Lifeline Productions. 1-800-523-8669. LifelinePro.com.
All right, folks, welcome back to segment two of the Creation Science Hour and a Half. This is Kent Hovind and Jonathan Sampson live this July the 8th. 2005 in what's left of Pensacola from the last hurricane, and we shall see what the next one does. They're saying 125-mile-an-hour winds when it hits Jonathan, gusting to 155. That's faster than your moped will go, isn't it?
Well, how fast was it?
Up to 155.
Yeah, I guess that depends on what angle I'm riding down the road.
Paul, you probably had your bike up to 155. Is it pretty windy at 155? 165, he says. Okay. That's pretty windy. Stick your head up over the windshield and it jerks it off. We don't want to do that. All right. We're the folks who believe the Bible is true and evolution theory is dumb, and we're here to help those who've been blinded by it. And Eric is calling in asking about slavery. So your question was, should servants obey their master? Or should
slaves.
Should slaves obey their master?
You know, I'm also glad you mentioned that, because that was another thing I kind of realized, because Jonathan always mentioned how people put themselves in the position of slavery. And, you know, that's a very small minority of the people who actually did it. But
Wait. What's your evidence for that?
Well, it's just a known fact that tribes conquer each other.
Okay, but you're saying you're trying to attribute this to God's word. Show me where it says that they're conquering each other and forcing slavery and stuff.
It's a historical fact that happened.
Well, show me. You're just saying this is a fact. Tell me,
well,
how
show
do you
me
know
that Jesus existed. It just happened in history.
You're the one
you
making
it.
The affirmative statement.
Hold
here,
on,
man.
Before we get off on details here, I want to look. I want Eric to understand the issue of slavery is something we will discuss here. However, we're several steps away from the creation evolution topic. Rather than discuss the merits of evolution or give me evidence for evolution, people such as Eric and others call in and try to discredit the Bible, which has really nothing to do with the merits of evolution.
Well, Kent, if you're saying I'm just trying to distract you from evolution and creation, that's not true. What I'm trying to do here is kind of discredit the Bible and show that it's not a good base for morality, because you always say how evolution is created, you know, and it's dangerous. And I think that's horrible.
I agree.
People
I think
were sociopaths to begin with. And evolution really had no change on whether, you know, they were going to murder mass people or not.
Well, adding evolution into the mix is like putting gasoline on an already burning fire. People, for whatever their purposes and their evil hearts, have always thought they may be superior to somebody else because of the color of their skin or the size of their muscles or the color of their hair. But still, the fact is, teaching evolution to wicked humanity, even Stephen Gould said that. He said racism may have been popular before Darwin, but it increased by many orders of magnitude following the publication of Origin of Species.
Do you see how teaching people Christianity can have the same effect? I mean, if they're going to be evil, they're going to be evil whether they believe in a God or not.
I think people are evil at by nature, okay? We have a sinful nature, and... You know, teaching morality to a person who is not a Christian is about like trying to teach a pig to fly. They're not interested.
Well, you can.
Well, I'm interested
in
morality. I'm quite the atheist.
There are non-Christians who are very moral people, but you know, I guess justifiable. You know, why? You know, what basis do you have? You know, absolute basis for morality.
You have to think about every single topic. Now, take like Terry Schiavo, for instance. Half the Christians, even evangelicals, are split on this issue.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have to think about it, whether it's right or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. A lot of thought on everything.
And that was a very thought-provoking case, and I still don't know where right and wrong was on that.
Exactly.
Okay, you got me.
There's an example where you can't use the Bible, and yet people try to, and where it's not the best example, or it's not the best source for morality, especially since we have things that slaves should obey their masters. That's not moral.
Well, the Bible says servants obey your masters, not slaves.
No, it says slaves.
Okay.
It says slaves. It says servants and slaves, to be more specific.
Well, let me address your question. Should slaves obey their masters?
No. No, they shouldn't.
They should not. Understanding they will
that
probably
implies
be.
That one man owns another, and that is wrong.
Well, you're asking a different question of should there be slavery.
You know, well, hold on a second. One, you look at Jacob, was it Jacob and Esau, who sold his birthright?
That's not into slavery, but the birthright.
Well, you know, but he pretty much sold his birthright to his brother. So his brother then pretty much had control there.
Well, the custom in Israel was the oldest son got a double portion.
Mm-hmm.
So if there are eight kids, the inheritance is divided up into nine pieces.
He just gave all that he had, basically, to his brother.
In this case, there were only two sons, so it would be divided up in three pieces.
Yeah.
And the oldest son gets double portion. But in this case, he said, look, I'm hungry. Give me a bowl of food, and I will give you my... I mean, he sold his inheritance.
Yeah.
Right. That's not going into slavery quite the same. But...
How is that the same? He's just selling his inheritance of his money and his land.
Yeah, it's probably a bad example on my part.
But
there.
His brother's not going to, you know, he doesn't become a slave.
Right.
That would be the difference. Okay.
Well, selling yourself as a slave is kind of
not too
parallel
smart.
To selling yourself into prostitution. Both are wrong, yet people do them anyways. It's, you know, it doesn't make it right.
No, come on. Selling yourself into prostitution?
Yeah, selling your body.
Is just like selling yourself into slavery?
Yes.
I guess it is on a shorter
both
term.
Both are just disgusting. So don't you agree?
No, well, hold on a second. And this is a verifiable fact since you're all into those. People would do that to pay debts. People would do that to feed their families. People would sell themselves into slavery. That's working hard for somebody else doing their work to pay for your family.
No.
I just don't see that as like, ripping off your clothes and laying there for people to enjoy you.
No. Jonathan, I read a book once, and it explained how these young people came to America, and as a result, they would... It was close to slavery, where they would say, like, if I came to America on this boat for free, then I would work for you for 10 years.
I don't doubt it.
No, that's a similar case, but the fact of the matter is they're only working for a number of years, and they're not really called slaves. They'd just be called servants or something like that.
That was different than slavery. I agree. Okay, so let me ask you a question, though. Should a prisoner obey his prison guards?
No, that's not slavery, though. No one's owning the human. He's just in there. He's in the prison. Slavery has, it states that one human owns another. The slave is owned by, and he's a piece of property. And that's really the whole beef I have with this whole thing, is because it's so wrong and so immoral.
Well, let me ask you just a couple of questions here, and I may be on a bad point here, but... let's say you have a kid, and you don't decide to pay any child support on your kid. You know, is it wrong for them to come and obligatory take money out of your paycheck before you even get your paycheck to pay for your kid?
No, that is a pretty bad example.
Well, hold on a second. No, because they're not even asking you for your permission. They're just going to take your money
because of
a debt you have.
Slavery, a good part of slavery would be working without seeing the fruit of your labor. Somebody else gets the results of your work. You work in the cotton fields, and the master gets all the cotton.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if you have to work 20% of your time for somebody else to get the goods, i.e. the government take away the fruit of your labor, at the point of a gun, be that taxes or...
Yes, but you still have freedom to do anything you want.
Do you?
Sometimes your whole paycheck is taken out, yes, but
let me ask you a question. If you just up and stopped giving money to the government, can they throw you in jail?
Yes.
Okay,
now
is that a good thing or a bad thing?
No, in America you have freedom, except there's only two things you really have to do. I forget the first one, but one of the others is paying taxes. You have to pay taxes.
Death and taxes is what they always say. Death and taxes, everybody. Okay, but if you're only taking 20%, then 20% of your time, you're a slave. Just like a prostitute is a slave.
No one owns you, Kent.
No
one owns. That's what slavery is.
Now, hold on. Do you have a say, or are they just saying, give us your money 20% of the time? You have no authority. We're taking 20% of your time. Do you have a say in that, or are they just going to do it, regardless what you think?
Jonathan, you can't tell me this is a good example.
No, come on. I'm asking you.
You can't tell me this is a good example.
I'm asking you a question here. Tell me, is that wrong or right for them to say, we're going to take 20% of your income without your permission? Is that right or wrong?
It's the way a society works.
Is that right or wrong?
Okay,
come on, we're talking about right or wrong
here. He's onto a key point. It's the way society is. So, during the time these Bible verses were written...
It doesn't make it right, though.
Well,
it doesn't make it right, and the Bible should.
Come on, is it right or wrong for them, the government, to take 20% of your income?
I think it's right that they take the money.
Without your permission, just like rip it from your hands.
They don't really rip it. You have to actually, write a check, and I don't know the whole process of taxes, but...
No, they deduct it from your paycheck, typically. You don't ever get to see it, and a certain percentage is gone.
It's an obligation. I mean...
Or child support, as Jonathan brought up. So
I think it's right. I think it's right that we have to pay taxes, but that's a whole other debate.
No, no, it's not. It's right that we have to pay taxes. It's right. You're saying it's right that they take it from us without us voluntarily giving it to them.
There was a big war over that 225 years ago where they threw a bunch of tea in the harbor and made it fit to drink even for the
birds. No, that was taxation without representation. That is completely different.
Yeah. Well, we got another break here. Eric, hang in there. Interesting discussion. We'll be back, folks, in about 1 minute.
InterChristum knows every employer looks for new employees differently. That's why we offer employers options. With InterChristum, you choose how aggressively you want to search. You choose whether you want pre-screened candidates. You choose whether you want the best qualified to automatically boil to the top. Make InterChristum your choice. Get started at InterChristum.com or email us at employeehelp@InterChristum.com. InterChristum connects quality employees with employers just like you. InterChristum, a Christum ministry.
Thanks for listening to www.truthradio.com. Truthradio.com on the Internet is our central location. You may sometimes find us broadcasting elsewhere through a local station, through a shortwave station, but if you visit www.truthradio.com, you will find us. Visit often and listen all the time. If you go to Google and put in the name Gavin DeBecker, G-A-V-I-N-D-E-B-E-C-K-E-R, you'll see that though you probably haven't heard of this man, he's very well known in a lot of circles for his being one of the chief authorities on violence and the reason to fear it. He's written a book, Fear Less. Interesting title. Magnificent book. I found a quantity of these, a small quantity, and I'd be glad to share one of these with you for a very little donation to Truth Radio. This book is a secular treatment of the concept of fear, what we should be afraid of, and how we should deal with it. P.O. Box 344, Nipomo, California, 93444 is the address to use. Donate anything you choose when you ask for Fear Less, a book by Gavin DeBecker.
All right, folks, we're back. The Creation Science Hour and a Half. Kent Hovind, Jonathan Sampson, live July 8, 2005, and waiting on Hurricane Dennis the Menace to come strike Florida. I'll be gone to Alabama or Georgia preaching. So we are discussing the topic of creation evolution generally here, but Eric has called in and has been a frequent caller. We appreciate that. And his contention is the Bible is not a reliable source for morality.
Yes.
Because it justifies slavery. Okay. Take it away, Eric.
Now, I find it very interesting that the guide doesn't condemn slavery. You will not see that anywhere. In fact, the very quote from the scripture that says, slaves, obey your masters, indeed supports it. And then, you know, you mentioned how society, you know, widely accepted slavery at that time. Well, why should God, if he believes it's wrong, not say so? Or was it man who wrote the Bible afraid that society wouldn't buy whatever they're teaching them if they put in something that went against what they believed?
You know, God gave his rules for divorce as well. That doesn't mean that he condones it. Would you agree?
He gives us rules for murder. If someone commits a murder, they're to be executed. That doesn't mean he condones the murder. If this happens, then do this. If you're in slavery, then obey your master. If you have a chance to be free, then take it. You know, use your freedom. I think that's what the scripture clearly says.
If someone steals my car, don't let them get down the block. That doesn't mean I'm condoning someone stealing my car. I'm saying if they do it, you know, they can't take it too far. Don't let them get that far.
Okay, and I'm just doing a Bible word search on the word obey and slave.
Well, real quick, there's a couple examples that I found, for instance, on wallbuilders.com, which is a historical Christianity website, talking about, you know, different types of slavery. They also mention Joseph being sold into slavery and how that was frowned upon. They also mention, you know, the 10 plagues that poured out on Egypt because the Egyptians were enslaving the Jews.
Mm-hmm.
So if God's okay with slavery, then why would he even care about the Jews in slavery and pour out 10 plagues?
Well, maybe he did. And you've often mentioned, you know, free will, God can't control, or he can, but he doesn't control what happens, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard before that perhaps, you know.
Let me ask you a question. If you think God condones slavery, wouldn't it be inconsistent for him to pour out 10 plagues upon Egypt for enslaving Jews?
Well, he allowed the Jews to be enslaved for a long period of time as well.
Wouldn't it be,
okay,
if he condones it, then why would he pour out 10 plagues, you know, if Pharaoh didn't let him go?
All right,
hold it.
We got our guest is calling in, Scott Campbell, to be a guest on the program. Eric, if you can call back in about 15 minutes when we're done with Scott.
Mm-hmm.
The verses you're looking for, Colossians 3:23, which says, servants obey in all things.
No. I will look up the verse.
Yeah, you look it up.
Whole thing for you.
I'm unable to find it saying slaves unless you got a perversion instead of a real Bible version. If you get a King James Bible, show me where it says slaves. I'd like to see that. Anyway, call back when we're done here. Eric, I appreciate you calling in. Okay, go ahead and transfer it. You got it there, Jonathan?
No, not yet.
Okay, you got to transfer it in, I think.
She will.
All right. Well, folks, if you want to be on the program, we're going to have a guest here in just a second, but then afterwards you can call in 850-479-DINO, 850-479-3466, extension 136. Or you can instant message us, even now during the caller, at AOL instant message, Dr. Dino Live, DrDinoLive. Transfer it to us, Glenda. 137? Technical difficulties. According to evolution, you know, complex things happen automatically.
These are probably an ID10T error on my part.
Well, this has, you know, 20, 30 basic buttons. You know, imagine a cell with 40 bazillion parts to it, you know. Maybe she's going to 130. 137.
No, this is 136.
This is 136. There's the problem. Okay, 137 is upstairs. Got it. That's the complexity. See, one little number wrong. Think about how many things can go wrong to make a cell die or make a human being die, you know. There we go. All right. All right. We got Scott Campbell with us on the phone. Scott, can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Hey, great. I don't know if you ever listened to our program before, but
yes, I have quite a few times.
Okay, good. Well, we want to introduce our listeners to other people who deal with the subject of creation so they can tell a little bit about their history, how they got into this and their ministry, and what they have available on the website, et cetera. So go ahead, Scott. Tell us about yourself.
Great. Well, I got out of Bible college in the early 90s and really didn't know what the Lord wanted me to do, and ended up working at a jewelry store for a little while, and a friend gave me some tapes. They were pretty bad copies, but excellent material of a fellow named Kent Hovind.
But
your stuff has been copied and copied and copied, and I tell you what, it really, listening to those tapes really opened my eyes to a lot of things, and lo and behold, within a month or so after listening to those tapes, you came and spoke at a church in our area, and we attended the church, and I was just blown away by your presentation, and I felt the Lord saying, hey, look, this is something you can do, and this was about in the year 95, and I spent a couple of years gathering material. In 97, I started doing the presentations. You know, you you gave a challenge to get out there and do this, and I tell you what, the Lord just really touched my heart and said, get out there and get busy. And Lord's really blessed in a lot of ways. We've had a lot of ups and downs, a lot of hardships in the ministry, but I tell you what, every time something happens, it looks like that you're not going to be able to get by, the Lord always has a way, and we praise the Lord for that. But you've been a great encouragement to my ministry. Long about I guess it was 99. You gave me a CD with all your slides on them, and that really helped boost us along. I started out with just a regular carousel slide projector. I spent a couple of years in the library just gathering pictures and reading articles, and I know this is not normally the case, but my faith in creation was strengthened so much by reading articles in Time and National Geographic and Discover. And like I said, I know that's not usually the case, but when you start looking at things through the right glasses and you start reading their articles, it becomes so clear, so abundantly clear, that they have no idea what they're talking about.
They really don't have a clue. And it's interesting when that comes over you like that, when you realize, man, nothing to fear.
They don't. You know, one of my favorite experiences with that was a series of articles in Time magazine over the period of 5 or 6 months. They had an article, Is the Bible Fact or Fiction? It had a big picture of Moses on the cover about ready to throw the commandments down. And in the article, they said, well, we found evidence of the walls of Jericho. We found evidence that King David was a real person. We even found the tomb of Caiaphas. Therefore, most of the stories in the Bible are probably not true. And then,
well, that's good logic.
And then a few months later, they had another big spread on the Cambrian explosion. And they had all the nice little imaginary creatures on the cover, you know, the big colorful pictures. And they said, you know, we found absolutely no evidence that evolution ever occurred. Therefore, it all must be true.
That was Stephen Gould and Niles Eldridge's conclusion. Say, no, we don't find any fossil evidence. So that proves it happened quickly.
Right. And, you know, it's just amazing when you start to look at, you know, that's a tendency I've always tried to use. I've always tried to go and use the enemy sources to bolster the truth. And, you know, one of my favorite quotes comes from a Time magazine article on how man began, and it says, despite more than a century of digging, the fossil record remains maddeningly sparse. With so few clues, even a single bone that doesn't fit into the picture can upset everything and has forced scientists to concoct new theories amid furious debate. You know, I just love that one because it says everything we find disproves everything we found, and therefore we have to make up something new. You know, we don't have to do that in the creation. We've got the truth. And,
amen. Well, how do people get hold of you, Scott, and where's home?
My website, my home is in North Alabama. I've got a website, lastdaystruth.com.
Last Days Truth?
Yes, sir. Lastdaystruth.com.
Truth singular, T-R-U-T-H.
Right.
Okay, last
page. And through that, you can link to my creation page as well as any articles, you know, that I've got on there, and I've got a lot of stuff. One of the things that I've been involved in lately is I've been doing a lot of more research into the New World Order, and you've got some excellent material on that, and that really caused me to springboard into looking into that more. I'm producing a video that I should have ready within the next 2 weeks on the New World Order. I've preached a lot of messages on the roots and fruits of evolution. When you examine the history of the New World Order, of course, it's not new at all. It goes all the way back to the Tower of Babel. And the Lord's really burdened me in that respect. And another aspect of the ministry I've got, I do a lot of vacation Bible school programs, and that seems to be very well received. You know, I'm sure there could be 1,000 Kent Hovens out here, and we still wouldn't cover all the ground. But the Lord led me to look at some areas and try to fill some gaps. And you know, there's a lot of work to be done. The Lord's coming back, and this world's in trouble.
Amen.
I believe the creation message is going to be the thing He uses to wake people up, and that's really what we need. We need people to wake up and realize, you know, there's more important things in the world than NASCAR or the football game or, you know, the Michael Jackson trial. I mean, there's eternity out there, and we need to use every tool at our disposal to get them to think about that.
Here you are in North Alabama saying there's things more important than NASCAR.
I know, that's kind of dangerous. I hope nobody heard me.
Yeah, they might come make you a slave, huh? Like we're talking to the last caller about the slavery. He thinks it's the Bible's wrong about that. But anyway, well, good. So you're going out speaking on creation, evolution, and doing a ministry there from North Alabama, and you've been doing it since 90...
About 97 is when I booked my first meeting.
Awesome. Well, amen. Well, keep it up. Anyway, we can help. Did you come down to our boot camp?
I wasn't able to make it down there. And as a matter of fact, I kind of wondered if y'all had left town this weekend when I kept getting an answer machine calling in.
Oh, so, I'm leaving tonight.
Yeah.
Well, if you call after 5, you automatically get the answer machine. Just dial straight to extension 136.
Okay.
But you probably got another caller on the line, so good thing somebody picked up. Well, brother, give your website one more time so folks can get a hold of you.
It's lastdaystruth.com. I'm giving my email address. It's kjvdino@bellsouth.net. That's the email. Just email me directly.
kjvdino@bellsouth.net. Bellsouth.net.
If anybody wants to give me a call, my daytime number is area code 256-479-1611.
That's a neat phone number, 1611, KJV.
There you go.
I like it. All right. Well, thank you so much. Appreciate you calling in, brother.
Thank you, brother.
All right. Come visit.
Bye-bye.
All right, folks. If you want to call in beyond the program, 850-479-DINO, 850-479-3466, extension 136. Or you can instant message us at AOL Instant Message, Dr. Dino Live.
Yeah, you know, if you look at, I've been looking up the slavery Bible stuff, and it's just, if someone would actually look at the websites dealing with this, it'd be all too clear to them. You know, aside from that, I was just thinking, wasn't Moses' wife black?
Yes. Well, she's Ethiopian, so that's assumed she was
Ethiopian.
Black. Right.
Yeah, so it'd be kind of weird for Moses to be condoning slavery with a black wife.
First place, I've looked up slavery and slaves in my God's Word for Windows.
Mm-hmm.
The word, all of those words, the total times they're mentioned is 2.
Mm-hmm.
Jeremiah 2:14 says, is Israel a servant? Is he a homebound slave? Why is he spoiled? Revelation 18, talking about in the last days that the city is going to deal with fine linen and ivory and apes and peacocks and all this stuff. And it says, and cinnamon and odors and ointments and frankincense and wine and oil and fine flour and wheat and beasts and sheep and horses and chariots and slaves and souls of men.
Well, who do we got on the phone here?
Eric
calling back.
Okay,
so
good.
Eric, I've been searching. I'm only able to find 2 verses that even use the word slave in the entire Bible. I find servant, you know, hundreds of times. But
I find Ephesians 6:5-9.
Well, let me ask you a question here real quick. Let me give you just a couple verses and get your opinion on them.
I'm looking up the verse here. Ephesians 6, you said?
Here we go. See, he's quoting scripture that talks about how to treat a slave, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, let me ask you a question. I want to get your comment on this one because we've commented on yours. Exodus 21:16 says, he who kidnaps a man, whether he sells him or he is found in his possession, shall surely be put to death. What does that say to you?
Well, then it's obviously a contradiction.
Now, hold on a second. Deuteronomy 24:7 states, if a man is caught kidnapping any of his countrymen or one of the sons of Israel, and he deals with him violently or sells him, then that thief shall die. So you shall purge the evil from among you. What does that say to you?
That says to me that there's quite a contradiction.
No, hold on a second. Wait 1 second. Just tell me, does that condone or condemn the stealing of a man and the slavery of a man? Does that condone
that's talking about just kidnapping, going out and stealing another person.
Okay, here's another one for you. For whoremongers, for them that defile themselves with mankind, for men stealers, for liars, for perjury, for persons, if there be anything that among you that is contrary to sound doctrine, that's 1 Timothy 1:10. And it puts in the same category as whoremongers, liars, purged persons, and contrary to sound doctrine, right in there, men stealers, people who take other men and force them to be slaves. It puts right in there with the wicked other things, exactly what you're saying the Bible condones.
And why should
Ephesians 6:9, and ye masters, do the same thing unto them. Forbearing, threatening, don't threaten them, knowing that your master also is in heaven, neither of their respective persons with him. So it says, treat them with respect, because that's the way your Father in Heaven treats you.
I also noticed, Jonathan, that those were in the Old Testament, and...
1 Timothy 1.10, Ephesians 6.9? No, I'm sorry, those are New Testament. But let's give Eric a chance
to talk
now.
Ephesians 6.9, that's... Hang on.
Okay. Now, the Ephesians passage, I have it in front of me, King James Version, Ephesians 6.5, says servants, not slaves.
No, it says slaves right here. I'm looking right at it.
You don't have a King James Bible, then. That's your problem.
Well, what's the difference? Why should they be...
I'm pointing out one of the differences right there. There's a great difference between a servant and a slave. You can become a servant to somebody for 8 hours a day just by going to clock in at their place and flip hamburgers. I mean, you're their servant. Do what they say. This passage is not talking about slavery.
Well, you look at the two different types of passages we have. I just quoted four of them right there saying not to put people into slavery. And then he's quoting some that says how to deal with a slave. And he thinks that because it says how to deal with one, that means it's condoning it. It's not saying no. I mean, you know, some people who don't condone gun usage, they say, just don't shoot me, don't point it at me, even though they don't even want you to have it. I mean, they're just saying, if you're going to have that thing, keep it pointed, you know, don't shoot, you know, don't aim at something like your intended target.
Well, plus, this is an example of why the whole King James issue is important. You have to start with the real Bible.
Well, I don't even think these verses he's talking about have anything to do
with it. Why isn't the New International Version a real Bible to you?
Okay, keep your finger in Ephesians there, Eric, and turn over to the book of Acts, chapter 8. And read.
Actually, I already put my Bible down.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Ken.
If you have an NIV, read me Acts 8:37. We'll take a second. Just go before Ephesians a couple of pages, maybe 20, 30 pages. Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Acts, chapter 8, and start reading at verse 36. Tell me what you find there. I've got an NIV here.
While he's looking, let me read those two verses earlier again. Exodus 21. All right,
I'm in Acts. What was it?
Okay, read verse 36. We got a break here. We'll come back after the break, and I want you to read Acts 8:37 to me, okay? We'll be right back, folks. Hang on.
Somewhere down deep in the resources of Truth Radio, a video has been hiding, and I just discovered it recently. It's entitled The Civil War Debate. This is a public meeting with hundreds of people attending. It was held, I believe, in Georgia. There is one man stating the case for the North and another man stating the case for the South and a moderator. It's anything but boring. If you've studied our history going back to the Civil War at all, there's information in this video that you will consider to be really vital, and it's a really terrific experience to listen to it. I hope you'll order a copy as you write to P.O. Box 344, Nipomo, California, zip code 93444. Your gift of any size will bring you a copy of The Civil War Debate. Write to us soon. Thanks.
I remember one cool, crisp morning in the Grand Teton Mountains when I took my camera with me and hiked a short distance to the edge of Jenny Lake.
With Moments Together, here's Dennis Rainey.
I'll never forget the lake that morning. It was like a mirror. The mountains reflected perfectly off of the surface of the water. Several weeks later, when I developed my film, I chuckled at the picture that I'd taken that morning. You could actually turn the picture upside down, and you couldn't tell which mountains were real and which ones were being reflected. One of God's purposes for marriage is for us to mirror His image. But what happens to the reflection on a lake when you toss a stone into the water? Well, the image becomes distorted, doesn't it? Well, in the same way, our reflection of God's image is distorted by stones, the sins that can damage a marriage. Today, pray together as a couple that your marriage will honor God and that He will lead you away from sins that would distort His image in your marriage.
Moments Together with Dennis Rainey is made possible by Regal Books, the Moments Together devotional series at Christian bookstores or regalbooks.com.
All right, folks, welcome back to segment number, whatever it is, four, I believe, of the Creation Science Hour and a Half here this July the 8th, 2005, just before the hurricane slams into Pensacola again. Okay, Eric, I don't want to take all day on this one topic, but go ahead and you're telling us, the point we left off with was, did you find Acts 8:37?
Yeah.
Oh, in NIV?
No. Well, you said to find it, and I looked there, and it isn't there.
Why isn't that interesting? That's one of 200 verses that are missing from the NIV, in addition to about 60,000 other words that are missing. Sections of verses, there are 200 entire verses, and many other verses have been, sections have taken out, or changed radically, it changed the meaning of the word. Now, we do have to settle this before we can settle the question about servants and slaves.
Okay, just to catch the listeners up here, we've got Dr. Hovind here and our good friend Eric. And Eric is wanting to know what the difference is between the King James and the NIV. He feels they're the same thing, basically. Right, Eric?
Hmm?
You're saying there's really no difference between the King James and NIV?
Well, you know, I've always heard just the Bible, and I was curious, so I asked a question.
Okay, so that's the topic right now is, are they the same thing or are they different?
Well, they are definitely different, and if you want to look up, I can give you another key passage that will just really make it stand out.
Well, before you do that, why would they take out words or verses?
Well, the NIV is a very good translation of a bad book. It's not a translation of the Bible. It's a translation of the Alexandrian manuscript, and that would be something I cover on video number 7 in great detail. I can give you just a few more verses that are missing. If you want to jot these down quickly and look it up for yourself.
That's all right. I'll take your word.
There are 200 verses that are totally missing, okay? Mark 9:46, Mark 9:44. But it's interesting. The King James, let me find it here. Okay. Proverbs chapter 18 and verse 24 says, "A man that hath friends must show himself friendly." That's pretty clear to understand. If you want to have friends, you have to be friendly. Okay? The NIV, Proverbs 18:24, says, "A man of many companions may come to ruin." What? A man of many companions may come to ruin versus a man that hath friends must show himself friendly. This is not saying the same thing in a different way. This is wrong. Okay? So, in the NIV... you have, obviously, in the Bible, in the King James, you have David kills Goliath. But if you look at 2 Samuel 21:19, you might want to jot this down, look at it sometime, Eric. 2 Samuel 21:19 says Elhanan killed the brother of Goliath. But in the NIV, it says Elhanan killed Goliath. Well, I'm sorry, this is wrong, okay? This is an error. So if we're going to discuss what the Bible teaches on a particular topic, I would have to insist, at least for my program, that we discuss it in the King James, because there are hundreds of just plain errors in the other versions.
I see.
That's why. So the word slave is only mentioned twice in the King James Bible, and the word servant is mentioned a bunch of times.
Now what were you saying to the caller about the one... You called in because I heard you mentioned something, but I never picked it up.
I don't recall, Jonathan, what I said.
You just said that they may enslave the caller, you know, and then you preferred that we were just talking about slavery with the previous caller. Now the Bible is wrong on the topic. That's it.
Oh, we normally talk about creation evolution, I think. I'd have to go back and listen to the tape.
You just told him that you were just talking about slavery with the previous caller.
But the caller was calling in as a guest to be talking about, you know, creation, evolution.
All right. But I think my time is up here.
Well, okay, so get King James and prove your point to me, if you would, about, because I think the Bible says servants. So a servant should obey his master just like an employee should obey his employer.
Go to wallbuilders.com, because every point or every argument you tried to bring up is thoroughly refuted on wallbuilders.com. And they go through and give, you know, just excellent evidence that involuntary servitude is not biblical. They have a huge article on this stuff.
And to keep an eye on the broader picture here, Eric, I do believe you are sincere and intelligent and searching. And I do believe if you keep searching and keep a sincere heart and don't get committed to a theory for any kind of moral reason, I think you'll end up becoming one of us. Mm-hmm. And we're looking forward to that.
All right, Ken.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Yep.
All right, bye-bye. All right, folks, if you want to call in on the program, we welcome your call. 850-479-DINO. 850 or 877, they'll both get you here. 479-DINO. When the answering machine comes on, you do not have to listen to any of it. Just hit extension 136, and it'll come straight through to the radio program, and you can be live on the air. Okay, Adam Brow, you've been waiting patiently here to get your instant message, which is AOL Instant Message, Dr. Dino Live. He says, yesterday you were discussing DNA with a caller. I came across something about DNA, that DNA could be described like having a rope with beads on it, and the beads are arranged into something like Morse code. Something that this caller seems to have missed is that DNA uses a code system like a language. For example, the word bat is only a word to somebody who knows the code system, the English language. A code system is needed to read the DNA. However, to make things even more interesting, the DNA itself makes the code system that reads the DNA. That sounds like a chicken and an egg problem for the evolution fairy tale. Wow. Excellent point, Adam.
We've got a caller. Who do we have on there?
We have Jared and Martin.
Jared and Martin, both of them.
Double teaming. This is, it'll be fair now, Jonathan, because it's been two against one a long time. And, Jared, that, we know that's been unfair. We apologize.
Well, that's quite a
but I have to have Jonathan to push the buttons because I don't know which buttons to push, okay?
I barely do sometimes.
He pushes the buttons. I push the buttons in people, in the people, you know, by making statements that kind of push their buttons. But Jonathan makes the radio program work. Well, Jared and Martin.
Yeah, hi.
Are you together in the room or just together on the phone?
On the phone.
On the phone. Well, good. How can we help you guys today?
Okay, well, I wanted to get one thing out of the way about the Barney Maddox issue. I went to creationevidence.org, and this is attached to the museum in Glen Rose, Texas, I believe.
Yes, correct.
Okay. The only reference I was able to find was a page printed by Bing Back Revolution, and the last paragraph says, mutation accumulation is relentlessly fatal, and it gives the same quote that you've quoted.
Okay.
And it says, geneticist Barney Maddox, 1992, but it doesn't give what source that's from.
Well, I'll find that link for you right now while you guys are talking.
I read that this morning, actually, but it's been a long, busy day. I don't recall. Matter of fact, it's packed in my suitcase to add I'm going to put the entire, I have to retype very slowly, hunting and pecking, the entire article into my computer because in my PowerPoint presentation, a lot of my slides have a little asterisk on there, which means there is more down below in the notes section of PowerPoint.
Uh-huh.
And so when people get my slides to start a ministry, they have, you know, not only the quote, but the entire context. And I try very hard to do that in my presentation. I don't have time, even though my seminar is now 17 hours, I cover a bazillion topics. I don't have time to read every quote in its entire context. But I sure don't want to take anything out of context. So would you agree that Barney Maddox said what I attributed to him?
I have no idea, because it doesn't even give the source that he said.
Okay, go to, do me a favor real quick, go to creationevidence.org.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the left side, down at the very bottom, the fourth link from the bottom is a link that says Archives.
Mm-hmm.
If you click on that, that will provide you a link to the Barney Maddox article.
The actual article?
Yeah.
Barney Maddox wrote the article.
Yeah. My computer's going a little slow here. But so.
Barney Maddox is a medical doctor who was involved in the human genome research, which started in 1988, if I recall. So they'd been doing it about 4 or 5 years when he wrote this article, saying so far they've discovered, you know, it doesn't take much of a change. Like they list in that article, Jonathan, read some of the diseases that are caused from
point mutations, just little, you know.
Just little point mutation cause horrible diseases. Cystic fibrosis, I think, is in there, if I recall.
Mm-hmm.
The problem that I have with this that I had even before I got the reference from you was that what he says in that paragraph is retarded.
We'd have to take it up with him.
Well, you really shouldn't put it open because you've admitted that mutations are fatal. What he says is just wrong.
I have always said mutations are harmful, fatal, or neutral. I am unaware of any mutations that have added genetic information that
I told you about one, Ken.
No, that added genetic, what's the word,
yeah.
Jonathan?
The duplication of the glucose pathway enzyme.
That's not adding new information.
Oh, actually it is because it's actually the mutations in the duplicate gene are actually accumulate, and it produces a new enzyme that's capable of metabolizing a new 5-carbon sugar substrate.
Okay. This has been covered already. That is not still new. What's your information? What's your definition of new information?
Well,
we're able to digest something new now.
Yeah, it's really...
So it's not as specified. It's just like a nylon.
Exactly. Pardon me?
It's just like a nylon-eating bug. It's not as specified.
I'm not saying it's actually like the nylon-eating bacteria, because I'm not exactly sure what goes on.
Well, it's analogous. You're saying it's not...
I'm talking about something different.
You're saying it's not as specified, though.
Pardon me?
You're saying it's not as specified. It can now digest something foreign, correct? So if...
Something new, yeah.
Okay.
New enzyme. And just a moment, because when we look at the structure of the genomes of very complex organisms, most of the genes can actually be shown to be sequence homologs of other genes in the genome. And so, basically, if we're trying to explain the evolution of genomic complexity, then we're also looking to explain why the genome is basically, why the genes, not the genome, the genes are basically duplicates of other genes that are submodified. So that's actually the kind of process we're looking for. And we're actually showing that those kinds of processes not only do happen, but they are also favorable to organisms. That's
okay. Now, you're telling me, let's say the human genome, I think it's chromosome 16, has 87 billion pairs.
Okay.
This example you're giving of increasing, what you say is an increase in genetic complexity, is sufficient to explain the origin of the information found in 87 billion pairs in one chromosome.
Well, it depends what you mean by the information. The genes, the actual protein coding genes, duplications do actually help to explain this, yes. Because most of the genes on any given chromosome are actually duplicates of other genes, or at least have sequence similarity to other genes. But basically, these are just submodifications, whether it was done by God or evolution or whatever you want to propose. I really don't care. But the thing is, if we're trying to explain this genetic diversity or this genomic diversity by evolution, then a duplication is a perfectly reasonable and also empirically testable way of achieving this complexity.
Okay, I agree that the genetic duplication, i.e. polyploidy, is sufficient.
No, not polyploidy.
Okay.
Duplication.
Okay. This process is sufficient to give you more genes to work with,
but
you're dealing with a process that involves, like, example would be typographical errors in a sentence that are supposed
to... That's not at all what it is.
Well, it's very similar.
No, it's not actually similar at all. It's a very different kind of process. It's like every third letter, every third letter in a sentence, for instance, isn't redundant for some words. But it is in the genome, for instance. So you're looking at a biochemically fundamentally different system from actually written words. So you can't really draw this analogy. It's a false analogy. It's made up to actually deceive people into thinking that biological systems are like the things that people do, people make, and then thereby making it look like it's proof of your point. But it's not. It's actually a very deceitful way of treating biology.
Well,
like that at all.
And I would say what you are doing is a very deceitful way of treating biology.
What, pointing out that you're deceiving people?
No, to show this little minor change and say this is sufficient to turn a rock into a human.
I'm not saying that at all.
That is exactly what you're saying.
No, I'm actually talking about explaining genomic complexity and actual genomic diversity. And I'm providing you a mechanism that actually does explain the patterns we see. You're not providing that.
Okay.
So really, your views aren't actually driving any genetics or molecular biological research. So I really don't see where you can stand on this point.
Oh, wait. No, the fact that somebody's views, i.e. evolution, is driving research has nothing to do with whether or not it's true.
No, but I'm not making that claim that it's true.
Well, you kind of implied that.
No, because...
You implied this is important science because it's driving
research.
What
I'm saying is that you're not actually out there finding these things out. You're not even privy to the first-hand information because you don't care. You really don't care. You just want to make things up and tell people that it's like the things we do. It's very much like human enterprise. Therefore, it was an intelligent designer. But it's not like human enterprise at all. And so it's a false analogy, and it's not reliable. So we have to look to other explanations. And by doing that,
we need to look
to biological systems.
All right, I just need to ask you the question. Do you sincerely believe that what you are describing is capable of accomplishing the evolution process?
Yes.
You really honestly believe that?
I think it's capable of driving it, as being part of the mechanism, yes.
Yeah,
okay. Like I said before, Hogan, this is only part of the explanation. We're not claiming like the only way that genetics
did. Yeah. It's not like duplicating a gene is going to turn something, you know, a reptile into a bird.
Okay, so you duplicate the gene, or you get extra duplicate part of the gene, which certainly happens, okay? And then there are mutations in this duplicate, which do not affect the actual organism, but they affect the gene code for the next generation. It may or may not be expressed. It may or may not.
Right,
it may or may not be expressed.
Okay.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be expressed in that generation, okay? And over time, these point mutations are going to accumulate new data, that new genetic information that changes the animal into something fundamentally different, i.e., reptile turning to bird.
No, that's not what I'm proposing at all.
That is what the evolution theory teaches.
No, that's what you say it teaches.
Well, explain it to me then, because I'm not getting it. What does cause the reptile to change to the bird?
Well, the reptile actually doesn't change into a bird. You get birds eventually as a long chain of processes from descent with modification, obviously. But the thing is, when we're talking about, okay, the gene is duplicated, but you're claiming that that doesn't have a selective advantage because you have a duplicate of the gene. But that's false. The duplicate of a gene of a sugar metabolizing enzyme in a bacterium that's being starved for its native substrate now has two genes that can, although they work poorly on the foreign pathway, it now has two copies of that enzyme to do twice as much work on the foreign substrate.
Well, yeah, I understand what you're saying, but
it's not like a duplicate of the gene is immediately useless or that it immediately has some sort of burden on the animal. In fact, a eukaryote, which has billions and billions and billions of base pairs, and has a duplicate of a single gene, isn't really going to feel it negatively or positively. And it's only later that maybe that gene is modified, okay? And it doesn't really affect the native function of the original copy, okay? Now be co-opted for a new function.
Hold it. We got a break coming up here. I'll give you a few minutes after the break here. I want to make sure you really believe that this is a process that'll work. All right.
If you're like me, you believe the FBI has never apologized, never had any thoughts of regret about Ruby Ridge. Well, here's FBI negotiator Fred Lansley. Hear what he says.
We fouled up in front of the entire world, and it should never have happened. And I think it was just a really disappointing day for the FBI.
The FBI later admits to covering up facts during the court case, and the rules of engagement are deemed unconstitutional.
Well, the FBI may not have officially apologized for what went on at Ruby Ridge, but it was impressive to hear Fred Lansley speak out against his bosses. That's almost never done. This DVD, new to me, is really great. Lots of good background information about the Weaver case, and Randy himself showing up and telling his story. You can have a copy if you write to me, P.O. Box 344, Nipomo, California, 93444. Listen to this bit of history. I heard him speak it.
I, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, do solemnly swear that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States and will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. So help me God.
Such passion. Such words of meaning, and yet such futility. Franklin Delano Roosevelt knew very well from his law training that when he pledged to defend and protect the Constitution of the United States, that he was pledging to defend and protect a mishmash of changing concepts. Changed like wind blows sand. The Constitution needs to be upheld in its original meaning, of its original words. Spread the word.
right, folks, welcome back to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. This is our final segment. This is Kent Hovind and Jonathan Sampson live, July the 8th, 2005, from Pensacola, Florida. We're watching the weather with one eye about Hurricane Dennis the Menace coming our way. I drive out of here in 15 minutes to go preach in Georgia. And we always have to say, we're the folks who believe the Bible is literally true, scientifically accurate. The Earth's only 6,000 years old. God made it just like he said he did. And the evolution theory being taught in our schools is the dumbest and most dangerous religion in the history of planet Earth. And we have on the phone with us Jared and Martin, who believe that mutations are one of the driving forces that cause evolution of more complex species. Did I say that fair enough, you guys?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Okay. All right, so your point
that was actually very nice. I'd like to say that was kind of nice, Kent. Once, you didn't really caricature the argument too much.
Well, okay, so to change from one kind of animal to another, whether it be from a rock to a human, which would be the extreme example.
Oh, there we go. You got it.
Right. But even to change...
That's much better. That's more of a Kent-like. That's perfect.
Okay. Even to change from an invertebrate to a vertebrate.
Yeah.
Or to change from a fish to an amphibian, or, you know, amphibian to reptile, or reptile to mammal, et cetera. All of these...
It's a bit difficult. It should be more like the origin of vertebrates, for instance, or explain the emergence of a vertebrate, because it's not really changing an invertebrate into a vertebrate, because you don't take an existing individual and tinker with it, and then all of a sudden it's a vertebrate. But then,
right. You take an existing population of invertebrates.
It's a generational thing, right? It happens over generations.
Right. Now, yes. My point would be, what you are believing here is not observable, is not even testable.
No, it's testable.
It's certainly not science.
Okay. So why do you have this show, then, if it can't be tested?
Say that again now?
Why do you have the show, or why do you have your seminar series if it can't be tested? Why do you go around telling people it's dumb if it can't be tested? You don't know if it's dumb or not.
No, I'm saying it's not part of science. That's what makes it part of a religion. Just like the existence of God cannot be tested by scientific means, okay? And I admit it's a religion. I just want you guys to admit yours is a religion so we can all quit paying for it with our tax dollars.
Okay.
Does science and religion overlap, Tim?
I think science and true religion have no conflict whatsoever.
Do they overlap?
I don't think you can have science without religion. You have to believe in things that are unseen, like gravity, inertia. I mean, you can see the effects of these things, but you can't actually see gravity. What is it? You know, give me a jar of it. So, yeah, you have to believe all sorts of things. So I would say certainly there's a great overlap. And to try to separate the two would be impossible. The evolutionists don't want to separate science from religion. They want to separate science from Christianity. That's what they want. Okay. So, anyway, go ahead and make your point. Now, you think that these point mutations, increasing genetic volume of genetic material, and
whoa,
then...
Whoa. A point mutation? Explain a point mutation to people.
Just one point in the genetic code mutating.
You mean one base pair changing?
One gene. Isn't that considered a point mutation?
No. Oh, no.
Okay,
one base pair is a point mutation.
Yeah.
Okay, but a change in a gene, for instance, like the duplication of a gene or a deletion of a whole section of the gene or the insertion of a transposon or something, that's not a point mutation.
Okay. So go ahead. I'll give you a few minutes here. Explain the process that you think is going to change one kind of animal to another, i.e. evolution.
Well, that's been explained to you quite a few times, I think.
Let me jump in here for a second.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. It's one thing to talk about the proposed mechanism that we think explains how evolution occurred, and it's another thing to discuss the evidence that evolution occurred.
Okay. Yeah, I think there's a great difference between the theory and the evidence.
I
think there's plenty of theory, but there's zero evidence, is my point.
Okay, and so why doesn't the geologic column count as evidence for evolution?
Well, first place, there is no geologic column.
Okay, that is ridiculous, Kent, and I can't stand to hear you say that anymore without me calling it ridiculous.
Okay.
The people
to Shell and Esso, that's for sure.
What?
I said the absence of a geologic column is news to Shell and Esso.
Oh, no. I think they would admit there certainly are layers of strata. I mean, they drill through them all the time looking for oil. But
have you ever cracked an issue of the Association of American Petroleum Geologists Bulletin?
I believe I do have a couple of them here in the library.
Oh, yeah, maybe you should look at
I lived in the middle of the oil.
There's a hell of a lot of Devonian and Carboniferous and Cretaceous, but really, really a paucity of mentions of the Noachian deluge. But anyways, carry on.
Really quick, just before you do a slap-and-run mechanism there, you might want to look at ICR. They actually have a geologist there that used to work in, oil, finding oil and different types of geology and stuff like that. It doesn't matter. I mean, he goes and explains it. Are you one of them?
What's that? No, I'm not
okay,
one of them.
Okay, well, he has experience in the field.
I use the research.
Hold on a second. He's got the experience in the field, decades of years of research, in the field, and he explains it doesn't matter if you believe the Earth is old or young to find oil, petroleum products.
Sure.
Yeah.
You don't have to believe it. No, you don't.
No,
have
believe
to
in the Earth. No, even if the Earth is old or young, still doesn't help you there. That's his point. So you might want to check that out with him.
It's unrelated to the topic, and your assumption that because a lot of geologists believe...
No, actually, it's not an assumption, Kent. It's because I'm a paleontologist, and when I go out looking for fossils, I often refer to the petroleum geology literature and the natural resources geology literature to actually get information on the geology of localities that I want to visit to collect fossils. And by and large, I find that their work is extremely reliable in many cases.
Okay.
Here's my point of geologic column. If the geologic column doesn't exist, then the people in the oil business wouldn't be able to find oil as efficiently.
That is ludicrous.
That's exactly the argument that is rebutted in ICR, because Carl Murray Church brought up that same brain dead argument right there. And I don't mean you're brain dead, but that the argument itself is not a good one. So you might actually want to check out a guy who spent, I think, 20 years in oil research and finding different locations.
Well, let me explain this for the listeners.
Find out how they know where that stuff is, because geologic column has absolutely nothing to do with that.
Right.
For the listeners, it is a fact there are hundreds, if not even maybe over 1,000 layers of strata to the Earth's surface.
And they have a specific pattern that correlates with fossils. Right?
That may or may not be correct, but it's a fact the Earth has layers.
It may or may not be correct. Let's just agree that that's correct.
No, it is. I will not agree to that. It is a fact that we have layers, okay? It is not a fact that you can prove those layers are vastly different ages.
That has nothing to do with
actually, you can prove that they're different ages, Ken.
Well, if you want to talk about the law of superposition, where the bottom layer forms first and the top layer forms last, that is only true in standing water. You need to watch the videotape.
Not really, actually. It's true in moving water as well.
No, you need to watch the videotape, Experiments in Stratification.
I've seen it. It explains very little in actual geology. It doesn't explain terrestrial structures. It'll explain, say, cross-bedding forming, but that's how cross-bedding actually forms. These layers do form in moving water. Nobody's denying that.
Multiple layers form simultaneously in moving water.
Sure, but how do you get footprints in these layers? I was just at Joggins a couple weeks ago, by the way.
I know, it's a neat place.
And there are footprints in the layers that are in the interstices between the trees, the layers bearing trees. Therefore, those were surfaces at one time.
Oh, I agree.
And therefore,
with that.
The layers below are older than the layers above. It's as simple as that.
But how much older?
Probably not much older. Probably, I mean, Joggins, that whole sequence of Joggins is allegedly all Upper Carboniferous, part of the Upper Carboniferous. So it's not more than maybe a few decades or maybe an afternoon between the layers.
Very good point. I'm glad to hear you admit that. So that's what the creationist would
say. The problem is, Kent, you've got many afternoons where you have to explain the origin of these trees rooted in the ground, growing up through these multiple...
You're not going to get by with that
your
one.
Problem,
Martin,
not ours.
Martin, you're not going to get by with that one. Okay, none of this slap and runs. That's why in my debate...
I insist
on one topic at a time. These trees are not rooted in the ground below.
That is bull roar. Ken, I was just there 2 weeks ago, and I was looking at a stump.
Okay, I
saw it.
You saw...
rooted.
You better study this out a little more carefully. Those trees.
And I went with the express interest in looking at that because creationists say it all the time. And I looked at it, and the roots go through several layers below the trees, and they end there.
Okay, now think about that. If the roots go through several layers.
Yes, just like trees that are alive today can.
Right. Could a tree be ripped out of the ground in a flood, as happened? Can a tree be ripped out of the ground like Mount St. Helens did to thousands and thousands of trees? Ripped out, breaking off the roots, but leaving a good clump of roots. It's going to happen here tomorrow when the hurricane hits.
Sure.
Trees are going to be jerked out of the ground, leaving a clump of roots, but the roots will be broken off.
Right.
They could then be deposited by the process the creationists talk about of rapid sedimentation in a flood, And you would end up with the tree standing up, running through multiple layers, with a broken off root.
Why just the stump?
With the whole tree, even.
No.
Okay. Sometimes it's the whole tree.
No.
Well, in a flood situation.
It's as simple as that. I mean, you'll find the whole tree lying down.
Do you find in Joggins, Nova Scotia, trees in the vertical position extending through multiple layers?
Yes.
Okay. And you're claiming those layers are different ages.
They form at different times. They're not different stuff. By different ages. Yeah.
How long does the dead tree stand up in your neighborhood before it falls down?
Yeah, I'm not claiming that it's millions of years it took for those layers to build up.
Well, good. Well, that's the whole creationist point.
The thing is, the problem you have is that you have them growing at different levels in the column, in that column at Joggins.
That's precisely the point. That's what's happening right now. That's what's happening right now at Mount St. Helens.
No, it's not. Yes, it is.
Go to Mount St. Helens.
Okay, first of all, that's volcanic ash. We're talking about sandstones and mudstones and clays.
There's a lot of things besides volcanic ash accumulating at the bottom of Spirit Lake right now. Every time you have a rain, stuff washes off all the hillsides, not just the volcano,
right,
and ends up in this lake. These trees.
Now, why is it just the tree stump?
Some of them are really long trees. I think the fact that they were ripped out.
Some of them are quite long,
okay,
but you never get the top. They're dead, of course.
Are there branches?
Burned off the top. Why are they? Okay. Why do the tops of the trees? Why are they flush with the layer formed above them?
I don't know that they always are. I think
they
if you look at the ones in Cookeville, Tennessee, they're not, because
I haven't seen those. But I'm talking about the ones I actually had seen.
Well, the ones in Cookeville are 30 feet tall, and the bottom 5 feet is coalified. The middle 20 feet is.
Let's talk about the Joggins ones. I want to know why the tops are always flush with the layers above.
Well, I think probably that's the event horizon during the flood where these trees were, there was wave action that probably eroded or broke them off. But the fact that they're deposited in different layers, what's happening at Mount St. Helens is the trees are settling out as they get waterlogged.
It's not the same at all.
It is. Just let me finish, okay? They're settling out generally based upon species. The Douglas fir have a certain density to the wood, so they waterlog at a certain rate as compared to the sugar pine. Or whatever other species they have there.
Right, but these are all the same taxa at Joggins. It's all Sigillaria.
Sure. You need to.
No. Explain that, by the way, because you know you're proposing the density business, and these are all the same taxa.
It is a fact that trees waterlog at different rates based on species and.
Yeah, but the same species.
Okay, and based upon stresses, if the tree was twisted, allowing
but
more water in.
Right.
You don't know what happened to the tree before it was jerked out of the ground.
You can see that they're not twisted. I mean, the bark, the runs of the bark are vertical and straight.
Or if you look at John Morris's log mat model for the flood, the log mat would drift over an area, dropping out hundreds or thousands of trees, and then the wind blows it away, and, you know, 3 weeks later it drifts back over the area, dropping out more trees, and you get coal forming and multiple sediments.
There's no evidence of that happening at Joggins.
Okay. Well, for you to say, then, that these trees do extend through multiple layers.
We do see it happen in Spirit Lake, just for the record there. So,
and then to say that you still believe the layers are different ages.
Okay, Ken, I'm looking out at my backyard right now, and there's grass on top, okay? And somebody throws a shovel full of dirt on top of that grass. Now, which was deposited first, the ground below or the shovel full of dirt?
The ground below.
Exactly. That's all people are saying when they're talking about superposition. Okay. They're not saying that the bottom one's Cretaceous and the one above it is Tertiary or something. It's not like that at all. And stop pretending that it's like that.
Well, Jared already
ages. Okay, 2 seconds apart is a different age. You're subscribing to the same thing. You admit it.
Right. But how long? I asked the question. You haven't answered it. How long does a dead tree stand up in your yard before it falls over?
How many trees do you know of growth from any layers?
Zero.
I don't know.
All right. Well, program's over. We appreciate you calling in. Hope, pray for the hurricane situation here, folks. We may or may not be back on the air live Monday. Hopefully we will be. We'll see you then. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
I'm excited about a new resource just made available to Truth Radio. A friend of Truth Radio has sent us a quantity of a booklet entitled Our American Common Law. If you've wondered what the difference is between common law and equity law and contract law, all these very important distinctions, and how the gold or money issue enters into this whole discussion, this booklet is for you, and we have enough copies, so I'm sure we can send you one. This is just under 30 pages, and it's yours entirely free of charge in return for your contribution of any size to Truth Radio. We need your support. Our address is Post Office Box 344, Nipomo, California, zip code 93444. Ask for the booklet entitled Common Law.
Learn of the diversity of religions next on today's Creation Moments. And now, here's our Creation Moments host, Ian Taylor.
What is a religion? You might be tempted to answer that it is any kind of belief about God or some gods. However, that's not complete enough to cover all religions. There are many old religions, not to mention the new ones, that don't believe in any gods at all, in the traditional sense. Some religions even claim to be non-religious, because they reject any idea of God. Did you know that the Supreme Court has recognized the beliefs of the secular humanist as a religious expression covered under the Constitution's protection of religion? All of which is to say, there are many religions around today, some of which we forget are actually religions, and some pretend that they are not religions. If we do not see ourselves as creatures, we cannot recognize the Creator. If his values are not central in our lives, our own values will rule. If his definitions of who and what we are not part of our lives, we will make up our own definitions. This is exactly what many are doing today. There is no shortage of religious leaders to encourage them, no matter how outrageous their beliefs. As faithful children of our Creator,